Good evening and welcome. I'm Brian Shaw, president of the George C. Marshall Foundation. My duties this evening are fairly simple. I get to introduce the master of ceremonies, and then he does all the heavy lifting for the rest of the evening. But before I do that, I want to acknowledge Secretary of Defense Robert Gates for taking the time to be with us at the reception this evening to honor his good friend and colleague, General Brent Scowcroft. There are many people in this room tonight for whom public service has been more of a calling than a career. Secretary Gates is at the top of that list. His willingness to continue his service as Secretary of Defense in such difficult times echoes the lives and careers of the individuals we are to honor here tonight. We are grateful for his presence and for his participation. We are very fortunate to have as our master of ceremonies tonight a journalist who has been writing about foreign policy issues for more than 30 years. He is one of our more thoughtful and articulate voices in the national conversations about world affairs. He recently collaborated with General Scowcroft and Dr. Brzezinski as the moderator of their discussions, which became the recent best-selling book, America and the World, Conversations on the Future of American Foreign Policy. David Ignatius has been a good friend of the Marshall Foundation over the years, a connection that began with his father, Paul, a longtime member of the Marshall Foundation's Board of Trustees, who is also with us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming our Master of Ceremonies, David Ignatius.
Thank you, Brian. I'm honored to join all of you tonight to pay tribute to Brent Scowcroft with the Andrew J. Goodpaster Award. First, I'm happy to say that we will not be presenting tonight the Brent Scowcroft Award. If you're not familiar with that unusual tribute, President George H.W. Bush, Brent's boss, explained it in a collection of his letters. The Scowcroft Award was a highly coveted recognition that I handed out upon occasion to cabinet members and White House staffers. It went to the person who could fall asleep in a meeting but make a good recovery and act as if he or she had not been sleeping. It was named for Brent, who was the champion at this. I should add here, President Bush concluded, that Brent fell asleep only because he worked impossible hours and cared for his invalid wife. With our wonderful program tonight, I am sure we will not have any nominees for the Scowcroft Award. But if you see one, give him a nudge. The Marshall Foundation established the Goodpaster Award as a way to recognize American heroes in a wide variety of fields who, like General Goodpaster, have exhibited great courage, selfless sacrifice, patriotism, and leadership in their lives and careers. Brent Scowcroft is such a man. General Goodpaster was close to General Marshall and worked for him at the War Department. Goodpaster wrote the first draft of the Nobel Peace Prize speech that Marshall gave in Norway in 1953. George Marshall was one of the wisest problem solvers in American history. On the first page of the book that Brian Shaw mentioned a moment ago, America and the World, I quoted a favorite admonition of General Marshall: don't fight the problem. I said that I had always thought that he meant by that, understand the problem, describe it to yourself, and then solve it, but don't fight it. This was clearly the way he approached the Marshall Plan, which offers valuable lessons and insights into many of the global problems that we face today. Like Brent Scowcroft and Andrew Goodpaster, at the very core of Marshall's being was an intense fire of integrity and courage that burned through his entire life and career. Presidents, world leaders, and members of Congress all knew that Marshall would deliver unfiltered, nonpartisan advice on the most difficult issues of the day. His willingness to speak the truth and to do it openly and honestly cast him above the other leaders of his time. Another former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, said of Marshall, "He was certainly no flamboyant general. He was not a character. There were no pearl-handled revolvers or corncob pipes or crusty anecdotes to spice up the legend of Marshall. He never wrote a book to tell his story. He never ran for election to public office. He never sought popularity. He never exploited his fame. He never asked for recognition or favors. He was a man driven more than anything else by a sense of duty, by the powerful, overpowering obligation of service." It is that commitment to honor and integrity, which tonight's honorees profoundly share, that makes Marshall such a giant figure in our nation's history. The George C. Marshall Foundation has done an extraordinary job of keeping the legacy and the lesson of George Marshall alive for future generations to come. And it's now my pleasure to introduce to you the Vice Chairman of the George C. Marshall Foundation Board of Trustees, John B. Adams.
Good evening. On behalf of the Board of Trustees of the George C. Marshall Foundation, it is my privilege and pleasure to welcome you to this evening's celebration. Tonight, we have the rare opportunity to celebrate three individuals who have given lifelong selfless service to our nation with honor, integrity, dignity, and compassion. Brent Scowcroft, Andrew J. Goodpaster, and George Catlett Marshall. These men are bound together not only by their military service to our nation, but also by their commitment and to advocacy of a forward-looking United States foreign policy in the context of the global community of nations. There are few Americans who have exhibited the level of selfless service displayed by Andrew Goodpaster. As a 31-year member of the Marshall Foundation Board of Trustees, General Goodpaster served 8 years as chairman of our board. He was deeply involved in all the foundation's programs and was excited about the foundation's expanding international programs. We are fortunate to have several members of General Goodpaster's family with us this evening, and I would like to ask them to please stand and be recognized. Like his dear friend Andy Goodpaster, Brent Scowcroft has also been engaged in the work of the Marshall Foundation for many years. As a trustee and now member of the Council of Advisors, General Scowcroft has offered guidance, support, and wise counsel to the Foundation on a number of topics. We are grateful for his ongoing participation in the affairs of the Foundation. We are also deeply grateful to the many friends of the Marshall Foundation who have supported this event. We particularly appreciate Lockheed Martin for its lead corporate sponsorship for tonight's dinner. Lockheed Martin has been long and committed partner with the Marshall Foundation on a series of similar events over the last 10 years. We value our long relationship with Lockheed Martin and the high ethical values shared by both the corporation and our foundation. The George C. Marshall Foundation preserves and perpetuates the memory and legacy of Marshall through a number of activities. Our museum, library, and archives draw thousands of students, scholars, and other visitors to our location in Lexington, Virginia each year. Our enhanced presence on the Internet makes our resources available to students and historians all over the world. Our education programs train our future military leaders, and offer undergraduate and postgraduate students the opportunity to work with primary source material in our collection. In recent years, the Marshall Foundation has partnered with several different organizations to conduct international conferences on the lessons learned from and the best practices of the Marshall Plan. I invite you to visit us in Lexington or to visit our website and become engaged in the Marshall Foundation. I think you will be impressed by the depth and breadth of our programs and offerings and by the commitment to sustaining the memory of George Marshall, a truly great American hero. And now, please enjoy your dinner.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I could ask you to eat your dessert, but a little less noisily. Having dined well, superbly, I must say, we now have the privilege of toasting, of celebrating the very best in our public life, which is the tradition of committed, creative, bipartisan leadership that our honorees represent. In college, too many years ago, I had a professor named Samuel Beer who spoke about the great chain of being, which was a medieval concept of the linkages that kept the world working and ordered. Well, there's a great chain of being in national security, and it passes from Marshall to Good Pastor to Scowcroft, and it weaves through many of the people gathered in this room. It's a flexible chain. At its best, it supports rather than constrains, and it allows creativity and growth and change as the world changes. And now, to pay tribute to the legacy of General Andrew Goodpaster, I am delighted to welcome my friend Susan Eisenhower, heir to a great name as the granddaughter of President Dwight Eisenhower, but part of the great chain of being herself as a foundation head, a consultant, and a person who has searched for creative solutions to problems involving Russia, energy, and other national security issues. She was a devoted friend and colleague of General Goodpaster, and she'll say a few words about him. Susan.
David, thank you for that very nice introduction. You know, it reminds me a little bit of probably a dinner that looked rather similar to this one just after World War II. Maybe General Goodpaster was in the audience, I don't know, but all the brass was there in attendance to express our gratitude to General Marshall for his outstanding achievement. It was his retirement dinner, and the master of ceremonies was so nervous at the sight of all of these important people that he got up and he wished General Marshall well and said, General Marshall tells me he's looking forward to retiring to Leesburg with Mrs. Eisenhower. And there was this sort of laughter in the crowd. And then he said, oh, my apologies to the general. To which Mamie Eisenhower piped up, which general? In any case, it's wonderful to hear these great names all put together in one place. I'm so thrilled and honored to be here this evening to say some words about General Goodpaster, but I'd like to really commend the Marshall Foundation for establishing this important prize and for the outstanding selection of General Scowcroft as the first awardee. It means a great deal to me because I believe I met General Scowcroft through Andrew Goodpaster, and we have become great friends as well. So I know that this foundation meant a great deal to General Goodpaster. Imagine how lucky I was, actually, to have an office next to General Goodpaster for almost 20 years. I had the opportunity to have this office well-located because after his retirement, the general spent a significant amount of time at the Eisenhower Institute, was a senior fellow. And, you know, he had a marvelous sense of humor on top of everything else. He used to jokingly say, okay, Susan, I worked for Dwight Eisenhower, your father worked for me, you worked for me, and now I work for you. So, boy, that was it was a wonderful experience. I didn't know that much about much of General Goodpaster's early years until I started reading about it, because he did so like to talk about his time with General Marshall and General Eisenhower. And I must say, every day was full of stories. He had all kinds of expressions that came from these two great men. And so I always made sure that the younger members of the Eisenhower Institute staff would be brought into his office while he opined on some important moment in history. We started a brown bag lunch series that we called Living History, and General Goodpass would often come in and talk about the U-2 incident or any number of other important things that he was involved in, including the Solarium Project, which he took a tremendous amount of pleasure in recalling, because he, after all, was one of the individuals who played an important role in that project. You may remember this was an effort by the Eisenhower administration to bring three very different ideas about how to regard the Soviet Union or to analyze policy there. And he would tell the young people many of those George Marshall-isms and Dwight Eisenhower-isms about the importance of planning and its role with policy. He said, for instance, that the substance of the policy benefits from the process used to design it. I always loved that idea. And, of course, he loved the von Moltke idea that planning is everything, plans are nothing. We used to hear that all the time. But I'm not sure whether it was a George Marshall or a Dwight Eisenhower idea that let's not make our mistakes in a hurry. Oh my, how I think about that now these days. I think it was from General Goodpass that I first heard the notion of, if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. This, too, was very sound advice. And so there were so many of these opportunities to share some very important time with him. He was really my mentor and my hero. I can tell you, when I first took over the reins of this institute, it had just pretty much been founded. I had an opportunity to travel to the Soviet Union first to put together what turned out to be the first open policy debate in the Soviet Union. General Goodpaster was the only person who didn't think it was too risky a thing to do. And he stood right behind me as we went out and raised really hard money, because nobody thought it was going to be possible to bring Soviet policymakers together with American policymakers in a public forum in 1986, televised for 5 hours a day for 5 days. But we did it, and General Goodpaster's encouragement played an enormous role in that. Later, when I was invited to come back to the Soviet Union alone, back in 1986, there wasn't a person I knew who thought it was a good idea. Only General Goodpaster said, "You have absolutely nothing to worry about. Get on a plane and go show your stuff." And so I am deeply indebted to him for the care and support and the mentoring he brought to this. But imagine what a place in history he holds for us. When you look into that background, he was not just a mentor, but really my hero, my American hero. And think of how history would have been different if he had actually stayed in Illinois, planning a completely different career as a math teacher. Because of the Great Depression, it turned out that he had to drop out of his schooling at Illinois College, and he sought a appointment at West Point, entering the class of 1939. In World War II, and I think this is a remarkable story, he commanded a combat engineer battalion in North Africa and Italy and led his men over a minefield while under fire. He was twice wounded in that and received the Distinguished Service Cross. He was a very young man. Then he went on, and this always really did impress me, to receive both a master's degree in engineering and a doctorate in international relations from Princeton University. This is a man of immense discipline and application, and it was a real opportunity to use a role model like this to influence the young people we were trying to bring along. Of course, perhaps one of the greatest notes of heroism, having served with great distinction as Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in Europe, he came back to become Commandant of West Point at a time when his old alma mater needed him desperately. At that time, he was the 51st Commandant of West Point, but the Point had just gone through a terrible series of cheating scandals when 152 cadets were dismissed at the Point. It was good pastor's integrity and his leadership that brought the great institution of West Point back from the brink. He was also the commandant who ushered in the first female cadets. So General Goodpaster will always remain my hero. In thinking about him today in preparation for this speech, I was really quite overcome by emotion. You know, it's just like he just walked out the door. And I would be really curious to know what he thinks about the situation in which America finds itself. But I think he'd be telling us to reapply ourselves and to buckle down and to retain our focus and to put our country first. Because this is a man who really did put his country first. I never knew him to press an advantage or to think of others after himself. He was a selfless individual who will remain one of the great figures in American history. And so I would just like to close by saying, General Scowcroft, this really is passing the baton, and I think it's just wonderful that you're the first honoree. Thank you very much.
It's said that when President Kennedy asked Paul Nitze to serve in his administration, Nitze immediately said yes, and only later thought to ask what position he was being offered. That's how strong his commitment was to serving his country in a challenging job. The same could be said of our next speaker, John Negroponte. Over the last 8 years, Negroponte has been asked variously to serve as our ambassador to the United Nations, our first ambassador to post-war Iraq, our first director of national intelligence, and since January 2007 as deputy secretary of state. In all those positions, he has served with distinction, discretion, and good judgment. Secretary Negroponte.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate that very nice introduction. And I want to thank Susan Eisenhower for that magnificent tribute to General Goodpaster. I had the good fortune of working with General Goodpaster when we both served on the delegation to the Paris Peace Talks on Vietnam. And I was a junior officer. I was the liaison officer with the North Vietnamese delegation, and General Goodpaster was the military representative to that delegation, and I remember him very well and very fondly, and think that the tribute you gave him was entirely merited. I also very much appreciate the opportunity to recognize Brent Scowcroft for his lifetime of service, making our country safer and stronger. I've had the privilege of calling Brent a colleague and a friend for nearly 40 years. In fact, I've had occasion on several times to watch him in the process of winning the Scowcroft Prize. My most vivid recollection, Brent, was when President Bush and you came to Mexico when I was ambassador down there, and I remember you catnapping on the helicopter as we were, and President Bush looking at you and saying, "There he goes again." Brent's a patriot, he's a public servant, and a consummate national security professional. During his two tenures as National Security Advisor, he made one of the most difficult jobs in government look easy, using his brilliance, his confidence-inspiring demeanor, and his wealth of experience to help shepherd our country through challenging periods. His role in forging a seamless national security environment within our government with a small cadre of skilled NSC staffers for two presidents will, in my view, go down in the textbooks as a model that should be studied for years to come. Two achievements I think are especially worth highlighting: Brent's contributions to opening diplomatic relations with China and his work bringing the Cold War to an end through the peaceful collapse of the Soviet Union. Considering these accomplishments and the broad sweep of Brent's career, I think it is not an overstatement to say that Brent has helped shape the modern international order. His legacy reaches beyond his great service to America. Brent has helped create a world that is more secure, more stable, and more prosperous. And so I want to congratulate him on this well-deserved honor tonight. Thank you very much.
I introduced Zbigniew Brzezinski at an event earlier this week, rather well, I thought. And when he took the stage, he quoted President Jimmy Carter saying, "Of all the introductions I have received, that was the most recent." Well, I'm going to try again. Zbigniew Brzezinski is known to everyone in this room as a brilliant former national security advisor, a trustee at CSIS, and an outspoken and, when need be, fearless commentator on national security. What I've grown to admire most about him is his irreverence and willingness to challenge conventional wisdom. We can all think of some large examples of that trait in his warnings about the dangers of invading Iraq or his focus on the need for an Israeli-Palestinian peace settlement. But tonight, I want to mention a small example. Every time that Zbig and Brent and I went to record our conversations for the book America and the World at the offices of our publisher on Pennsylvania Avenue, we were stopped when we entered the building by a burly guard at the elevator, asked to sign in, and then issued formal computer-generated passes. Finally, one day, Zbig had had enough. "This is ridiculous," he said. "We are wasting time and money and scaring ourselves for no good reason." The guard nodded, but still made him get his pass. Ladies and gentlemen, Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brent, David, first of all, thank you for the introduction. In fact, I had forgotten that I used that line, and I was sort of thinking of using it tonight. So thank you for helping me avoid a very great embarrassment. But since you've mentioned something else, namely the problem of dealing these days with the security limitations under which we all operate in this city, and which I really resent because I think they're so stupid and counterproductive, let me say that today I went into one of those buildings, and that is the case with most of them today in Washington, where you have to fill out a form, your name and so forth, with some sort of a security guard. So I did, and I wrote down Osama bin Laden. And then the guy waved and he says, "Well, it's upstairs." That actually happened. If I was given just 1 minute to sum up what deserves to be said about Brent Scowcroft, I would say public service, as his life's dedicated vocation. Secondly, unique combination of military and diplomatic skills. Third, special ability for relating the tactical to the strategic. Fourth, fundamental personal decency. Fifth and last, but certainly not least, at least in my opinion, a special talent for picking superb co-authors for his books. Yeah. Except for the last one, it is, however, remarkable how these outstanding personal characteristics are reminiscent also, as we have already heard tonight, of General Andrew Goodpaster, who graces with his name the award that Brent is about to receive. But I was given just two or three more minutes than one, so let me go on. I have known Brent for about 50 years. I first met him when he was a rising young academic star at West Point, and I was a young assistant professor at Harvard, and we participated jointly in one of these very famous SCUSA exercises at West Point dealing with international affairs. And we have continued interacting in the course of the subsequent decades. I have also been struck often in dealing with him how firmly his outlook is rooted in fundamental American values, and also by the depth of his appreciation of what is historically unique about America. Just the other day, writing in the Washington Post about the recent elections, Brent hailed, in his admirably nonpartisan but also eloquent fashion, the fact that, and I quote, "We have at long last been able to come together in a way that has eluded us in the long history of our great country. We should now celebrate this triumph of the true spirit of America." End of quote. While in office, he had the good luck to be at the side of the U.S. president in the final stages of the Cold War. And together, they handled that culminating but also critically delicate phase with skill and good judgment. I recently reread Machiavelli's The Prince, and some of what I read, it occurred to me, is very applicable to tonight's celebration of Brent Scowcroft. Machiavelli describes that the qualities of the successful statesman required a combination particularly of two important traits, which he calls virtù and fortuna. According to Machiavelli, virtù is that special talent for achieving major goals. He's out of town. Especially the instinct for acquiring and then effectively exercising power. That is the vital quality of a leader. And the leader's principal advisor must partake of it through total personal loyalty to the prince. Fortuna pertains to the ability to cope with the unpredictable and the unexpected. By knowing how to anticipate and to react to changing circumstances so that one's talents are not in conflict with the historical moment. In essence, Machiavelli stresses the really great statesman must not be impetuous in quiet times, but also not too cautious in stormy times. That is exactly what Brent has been in the White House, both in the quiet and in the stormy times. Thank you. Now it is my honor to invite General Scowcroft and General Merritt up to the podium.
General Merritt and I are honored to have the opportunity this evening to present Brent Scowcroft with the Andrew J. Goodpaster Award.
I'm overwhelmed. I hope I can get through this. I have received a number of awards over the course of a very long life now, and I've been touched at every one, but none of them have touched me the way this one has, and I will explain why. One's always supposed to start out with some jokes to loosen up the crowd. I'm not in a joking mood tonight, so you'll forgive me, the eloquent speakers who have preceded me can carry that burden. But tonight is so very special to me, because for me, first of all, I can't believe all the things I heard about some person tonight, to realize it was me. And my only answer to all these wonderful encomiums is it's a lot better to be lucky than smart. But this evening for me is what I would call a perfect storm of wonderful emotions. And it's for a number of reasons. First, I have three people who have played a role in my life for which I'll always be grateful. Two I call my heroes, and the third, my role model. My heroes are George Marshall, who to me is a figure from my very early adulthood, whom I always deeply revered. Both the way he conducted, and I mean conducted, World War II, but without the flamboyance, without being out on the front line, as a matter of fact, refusing a field command where he could have been a star, instead producing the strategy and executing it in the war, and then taking his military hat off, putting his diplomatic gown on, and producing some of the finest aspects that turned America from a world at war to constructing a world, reconstructing a world devastated by that war. The second hero of mine is President Eisenhower, so amply represented by my dear friend, that wonderful Susan Eisenhower. General Marshall, I never knew. President Eisenhower, I knew only once. He gave me my college diploma. But for the same reasons, that I made Marshall my hero, Eisenhower was the same. He was a modest, thoughtful, pragmatic, but decisive leader in war, with the ability to manage some of the most fractious officers under his command and get them to produce together the great victory of 1945. And then again, turning his attention first to academia, then back to the military to construct our modern military system, that is the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and actually get the Army and the Navy and eventually the Air Force to work together. And then, finally, the presidency. And he conducted it in a way that it was so smooth and so skillfully done that people didn't really realize what was going on. And there were a lot of comments at the time. He spent most of his time on the golf course, so on, and other people did the work. We know now that was nonsense. But he wasn't up beating his chest. He was saying, what's the job? Let's get the job done. And the third, Andy Goodpaster, who was almost literally my role model. And I will come back to him in just a moment. Well, that's not enough for the evening. Here I am, surrounded by an audience of dear friends, hearing wonderful comments by people whom I greatly admire. David Ignatius, with his great skill as master of ceremonies, used that consummate skill, molded and guided the observation of a couple of crotchety old men into a book of which we are both very proud. John Negroponte. I first met John when I first joined the NSC staff, where he was an old hand, and I hardly knew where the bathroom was. And I have been occasionally with him, always watching him through a variety of assignments over and over again in some of the most complicated areas of the world. Unsung, but vital. Ending up in our most recent travails, not only in the field in Iraq, but with the reestablishment of the intelligence community and now as deputy secretary. It's been a delight and an honor. We almost worked together at one time as civilians and pseudo-businessmen. And Zbig, as he says, we first met each other at a student conference. I think it was 1954. And our paths have crossed a number of times ever since. In, I think, very productive ways. You know, he and I are very different people, but we share a deep dedication to our country and to its welfare. And we have traveled together. We have written op-eds and things together. But this year, both and with David Ignatius, out of a concern for this country and the quality of its dialogue, we thought it important to sit down together and to show that a lifelong Democrat and a lifelong Republican could have thoughtful conversations directed at issues that the United States faces and deal with them as Americans in a thoughtful way, searching for a solution, not playing gotcha for one-upsmanship. I hope we succeeded in that, but I am proud to have been a part of it with Zbigniew. And there's one other part of my relationship with Zbigniew, which is almost casual, but in a sense deeply meaningful. Because in the transition from the Ford administration to the Carter administration, I passed the responsibilities of the national security over to Zbigniew. And it wasn't agonizing. We didn't have long discussions on everything. I had confidence that he knew what he was doing. And so it was a little more than a handshake, but it was a transfer of authority, if you will, in the very best sense of the word. So overall, I guess, for me tonight, it just doesn't get any better than this. Now let me say just a few words about Andy Goodpaster. As Susan and most everyone tonight has said, Andy Goodpaster epitomizes all that is summed up in the two words public service. He was the embodiment of public service. I learned more than I could ever explain to anybody from Andy Goodpaster and from his example. In the activities that I've spent much of my time in, that is in the national security business, and the National Security Council, Andy Goodpaster was a founder of the NSC system. While his title when he worked for President Eisenhower was Staff Secretary and Defense Liaison Officer, he was, in fact, the National Security Advisor. Because in the Eisenhower days, that was a very elaborate, formal organization, a sort of a military staff system, very different than it operates now. And Andy Goodpaster played the role of private advisor, personal advisor to President Eisenhower. But he, in fact, was the first of what came to be the National Security Advisor. And then later on, when President Nixon became president, he asked Andy Goodpaster to come in and design an NSC system because it had gone through several iterations since the Eisenhower days. And Andy did. He set up and organized the NSC system, which has fundamentally remained in its organizational aspects constant since the early days of the Nixon administration. he gets almost no credit. Indeed, most people don't even know that. But it was fundamental. It was typical of Andy Goodpaster. What's the job? Let's get it done. No histrionics. He had a brilliant career, which Susan has described to you. I want to reiterate just one part of it, and that is the story that Susan told. General Goodpaster had retired. There was a cheating scandal at West Point. He not only was willing to come back to active duty, but at a reduced rank, because the superintendent at West Point was only a 3-star general. So he gave up a star, came back to, in many respects, for a graduate, I can say this, maybe saved West Point from ruin by the strength of his integrity and his example. I first actually met General Goodpaster when he became the commandant at the National War College, almost the same day I became a student at the National War College. I had known about him before then because my boss in the Pentagon before had worked for General Goodpaster in NATO, in General Goodpaster's first tour in NATO. And he told me these glowing stories about him. And I learned about him because he had been director of the Joint Staff just before I joined the Joint Staff as a special assistant to the director. So he was known. I knew the image. I knew what he stood for. But at the National War College, he was unbelievable. He was so dedicated to imparting both his wisdom and his experience to us in the class in every conceivable way he could. He was engaged with us. He worked with us. He talked with us. We were so impressed that the students made him an honorary member of the class when we graduated. I was fortunate enough after that time to have worked with him in a variety of enterprises since those early days. And he was always the same, whether it was the Eisenhower Institute, whether it was the Atlantic Council, whatever it was, he was always the same. How could he make things better in and for the country he loved so dearly? He was and remains an inspiration to me. And my life he touched in such a special way that I not only have been lucky, but got one of the greatest gifts one can have, and that is to have a model so worthy of emulation as Andy Goodpaster. And that's why this is such an unbelievable evening to me. I am honored and deeply gratified beyond belief to my colleagues, the Marshall Foundation, to be the recipient of the award established in his name. Thank you very much.
I now want to bring this wonderful evening to a close. I can't imagine a richer cast of characters or a more powerful evocation of the common enterprise that everyone in this room shares. So I thank you all for coming to celebrate General Scowcroft and the values that he represents and spoke of so powerfully. Thank you all very much.